Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Last night, the Caps had their road winning streak snapped. They'll try to start a new streak on the road tonight, second evening of a back-to-back. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll cover the Caps and the Commanders in a busy Beltway Blitz in just a moment. But speaking of the Capitals, caller 10 right now at 800-636-1067. Congratulations, you're going to win two tickets to see the Capitals Saturday, January 4th against the Rangers. For tickets and the complete cap schedule, visit thefandc.com/contests. This is all courtesy of the Washington Capitals. Austin Eckler will be on the show in 2 hours at 6 o'clock right here on The Fan, presented by IT Cadre. But let's get to our Beltway Blitz right now. Ethan Cadeau, Monumental Sports, starts us off on the Caps. Ethan, the Caps were chasing history last night, and for just the second time all season, they lost a game by multiple goals in regulation, which is one of the craziest stats in the NHL this year. What went wrong last night?
I think they honestly just got unlucky. I mean, that second goal went off Rasmus Sandin's hand and basically went in. It just, they didn't get the bounces they had got on that 10-game road winning streak. I mean, I thought their play on 5-on-5 was pretty good. Spencer Carberry said the same thing after the game. He didn't really seem too upset at the play at all. It just, Dallas is a really good team, and sometimes good teams beat good teams. I mean, Dallas is great at home. They've kind of owned the Caps over the past few years, and that's exactly what happened.
Ethan, I'm obviously not a professional athlete. I'm just a pudgy zilch. But in 2019, I broke my ribs, okay? And it still kind of bothers me sometimes. Like, if I sit a certain way for too long or, like, stand up too quickly, etc. Alex Ovechkin broke his leg, like, an hour ago. He's on the trips, and he's not about to play or anything, but he's, like, skating around. First of all, oh, my God. Second of all, what is he doing? Then can the rest of us do it? And third, how close is he?
I'll answer your last one first. I think he's pretty close. I mean, he's in the non-contact jersey. He's on the trip practicing. Those are just the normal steps in terms of recovery. I mean, tomorrow will be exactly 4 weeks from when the injury happened. They said 4 to 6 week timeline. I mean, the math seems like he should be pretty close. I don't think he's coming back this week, but I mean, after that, I think it could be pretty close. And I think as to how he's getting back so quickly, the Russian machine never breaks. That's exactly what's happening. I mean, he was skating, what, like 8-9 days after he broke it? I mean, I hear you. Like, I've torn my ACL twice, and I'm not very athletic anymore at all. But what he's doing at 39 going on 40 is crazy.
Great chance for the Caps to get a win tonight in Chicago. The Blackhawks are just 10-19-2 on the season as the Caps look for their 22nd win. What do we need to know about the game?
Stop Bedard. I mean, he had a really slow start to the year, but he's heated up the last few games. I mean, he's obviously their best player every single time he touches the ice. If they can slow him down, I mean, like you said, Chicago's the worst team in the league. I know it's a back-to-back, tough. Dallas to Chicago isn't exactly an easy trip for a back-to-back either. So I would say the situation for Washington isn't the best, but from top to down, the 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, the Caps are just a much better team. So I'd be surprised if it's a close game, let alone if the Caps lose.
Ethan, if you had one of those very specific and strange, like, hostage situations where, like, people go, oh, if you had to answer. So I guess, like, you have to answer. I don't know why the kidnapper would want to know this question, but just bear with me. He's like, tell me, who's the number one goaltender on the Capitals? Who is it? Otherwise, something terrible happens. Who's the number one goaltender?
At the beginning of the year, I thought it was Logan Thompson, and I would still give him the edge over Charlie Lindgren, but I think both are capable of winning you games, high important games, and into the playoffs. I mean, Logan won his first 7 starts, I believe, so you can't really start with a new team better than that. But, I mean, we saw Chucky last year was one of the best goaltenders in the league, practically willed this team into the playoffs. So I think it's a good problem to have, and for now, Spencer Carberry's still going pretty much with that back-and-forth game, one game on, one game off rotation with the two. And I think he's going to try and ride that out as long as he can until one maybe takes control of the job. But Boston last year, they had Swayman and Ullmark basically alternate every single game. Look, I'm not comparing Lindgren and Thompson to Swayman and Ullmark. That's not fair to any of the four of them. But if you have two good goaltenders and two goaltenders that can win you games and the team is rolling, you might as well just keep playing them both, keeping it fresh, and if one takes control of the job, great. If not, keep playing them both until, I'd say, it's keep working until it's broken.
Yeah, right now they've both played 15 games. Logan Thompson's been a little bit better. He's been spectacular. Lindgren's just been, you know, very good. Logan Thompson's 12-1 in the net with a 2.45 goals against. Charlie Lindgren's 15-9, I should say 9-6 in his 15 games, and has a 2.7 goals against. But you're right. I mean, they both kind of given them exactly what they needed most times out. Ethan, great having you on the Blitz, man. Thanks for the time.
Awesome. Yeah, it was great to be back with you guys.
See you, buddy.
Awesome having you on. We appreciate you. Let's keep it moving. PJ Glasser of the BetQL Network joins us now to go around the NFL. PJ, what are we seeing as far as the Lions and expectations for them to get to a Super Bowl go over the last couple of weeks? Even though they still are doing a lot of things well, they are losing players left and right, and now they lose a game finally to the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen their odds, guys, diminish, where now they're co-favorites with Buffalo to win the Super Bowl. Obviously, after the Bills beat them head-to-head, they're still ahead of the Lions to win the NFC. But obviously, with all these injuries that they're sustaining, especially on defense and now losing Montgomery, you're starting to see kind of the market that was so high on Detroit all year kind of diminish a little bit. And then even their game on Sunday against the Bears, I find it interesting. They open as 7.5-point favorites. Chicago looks terrible last night against Minnesota, and yet the line moves the other way. The Lions now down to being 6.5-point favorites. So a team that was so good at the start of the year, regression, injuries is starting to hit a little bit, and you're starting to see the market kind of resemble that as well.
Does Detroit win the NFC North?
Oh, it's a good question. I'm still going to go with yes. They've been great inside their division. You know, they obviously beat Green Bay both times. They won at Minnesota. They'll play them again later on in the year. You know, these injuries are really tough, but I still think they're the best team, and I still think they're going to win the division.
The Steelers had a fairly ugly loss to the Eagles, and Mike Tomlin delivered one of my favorite lines of the season. He was asked after the game, like, how do you keep this from snowballing now? And he's like, we lost the game. Let's not be overly dramatic. I mean, I love him, but where are you on Pittsburgh's chances? And in the grand scheme of things in the AFC, in terms of making real noise, making a deep run, are they good enough to do that?
I don't think so. You know, I still think it's the three at the top. It's Kansas City, it's Buffalo, it's Baltimore. I think certainly Kansas City and Buffalo are the teams to beat. It's incredible what the Steelers have done, truly, this season, but this schedule, guys, that they've had to endure the last 4 weeks and their finish here, you know, at Philadelphia, at Baltimore, Kansas City next week, and then finish with Cincinnati, it's just such a gauntlet. The injuries are starting to pile up. We've obviously seen Pickens miss some time. Watt got hurt against Philadelphia. So all these divisional games that they had backloaded on their schedule with Kansas City and Philadelphia kind of in there as well, I think it's starting to take its toll, and it's going to be tough for a team that's likely not going to get a first-round bye. They would need to win out, and the Chiefs would need to lose out. So I just think it's too much for them to overcome. And even though I think they'll be a tough out in the playoffs, I don't see them reaching the Super Bowl.
PJ, Grant and I have argued about this a little bit, but I've been continually, and I don't say wildly, that may be too overstating it, but I've been really impressed with Todd Bowles and this Tampa Bay team. With all the injuries and things that they've had, they, you know, are in pretty much every game. They've blown a couple of teams out. Go on the road, a pretty impressive win that'll kind of get lost in the sauce with some of the other headlines this weekend. But they're going to end up being a playoff team in all likelihood. And their roster's just okay. I'm pretty impressed with him and them.
I am too, Danny. I mean, with Baker especially. You know, yeah. I thought when Canales left for Carolina, I thought the regression was going to hit for Baker big time. When they lost Godwin to that to the season in the Ravens game, I thought that was just another setback. And I mean, guys, they've had a brutal schedule this season, right? I mean, they've had to play Baltimore, Detroit, and Kansas City. I mean, they've played all the top teams in the NFL. They had to play Philadelphia. And here they are, 8-6. They're looking like the best team in the NFC South with the way Atlanta's looked here recently. And I think they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs. You know, they made it to the divisional round last year. They gave the Lions a tough game at Ford Field. I think the NFC postseason is going to be really good, guys. I think for a while there, it was looking like it was just going to be Detroit and Philly. But with how Minnesota continues to win, Green Bay, Tampa now, I think that NFC could be really good. And, you know, those teams like Tampa, some of those wild card teams, could maybe pull off an upset or two.
Washington's still sitting pretty as the 7 seed, getting in at 9-5. But they're one game up on Seattle with 3 to play. And they're 2 up on Atlanta, which sounds great until you realize the Falcons play the Giants this week, the Commanders play the Eagles, and then Atlanta's in Washington for a game that just got flexed to primetime. So there is a possibility, if Atlanta can get its act together, that they could go 2-0, Washington could go 0-2 and catch them. Is that something we should be concerned about?
I mean, it certainly is, considering, like you said, Grant, I mean, you know, Washington is Philly, and Atlanta's got the Giants. They're 10-point favorites in that game. So I do like Washington a couple weeks still against Atlanta. Guys, Cousins has just been so bad the last 5 weeks. And I know Washington's offense hasn't been as good as it was earlier on in the season. But I still think they're going to win that game. I think they're going to get into the postseason. But there's certainly cause for concern. You know, I mean, when you got a lead and you got to play a team head-to-head that's chasing you, that's obviously never a good thing if you lose that game. So big game this week against Philly, even a bigger game next week against Atlanta. But I still think Washington will get in.
Appreciate you, PJ. Thanks for hopping on, man.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Sounds good. Hit that local 53 sounder, Darius. That's our pal Mitch Tischler's music. Mitch, they won, right? I mean, they won. That's good. That's good they won. But, right? Isn't that kind of game?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was a game that they should have run away with. It should never have been as close as it was. However, at the end of the season, we're not going to look back on it and say, you know, they did it, but they won the game. That's what matters. They're in the catbird seat as you start looking towards the playoffs. You guys were just talking about it. I mean, there are scenarios this weekend that the Commanders can clinch a playoff spot, and that's a spot that this team hasn't been in a very, very long time. So, yes, it was a win, but at the same time, we're sitting here with plans for mid-January.
Mitch, how about the game and the season Terry McLaurin's putting together? 7 for 73 and 2 touchdowns, both plays that he made, and this is textbook Terry, but, you know, contested catches in the end zone. But on top of that, he was running free, beat his guy like a drum for 54, 52, and 62-yard catch-and-run touchdowns that just didn't get to him in the air. I mean, he could have had the best game of his career this week.
I mean, he could have had the best game in the NFL for a wide receiver, had all those balls been caught. I mean, he caught 7 of 10 targets. The three targets that he didn't catch were one a little bit overthrow where he had the guy beat, one off the fingertips, and then one underthrow. Imagine that he caught all three of those. Easily could have been 3 more touchdowns on top of the already, you know, 7 for 70 and 2 touchdowns that he had. The connection between Jaden and Terry, we've seen it growing, you know, game to game, week to week, month to month, and I think we're starting to see it, you know, get somewhere where it can be something special. And, you know, Terry's been putting up some really special numbers this season, and you know, the 11 touchdowns are tied for second in Commanders history for receivers. You know, you have him with 50 catches for 900 yards in his 6 consecutive seasons. Only 4 other wide receivers in NFL history have done that. You know, this is a guy who has been through so much with so much bad quarterback play here in Washington. To finally see him link up with a guy who can get him the ball downfield, with a quarterback that trusts him to go up and make a big play and beat his defender, is just so good to see. And I think the rest of the league is starting to see who Terry McLaurin is and the wide receiver that we've seen here in Washington for a few seasons now.
Why couldn't they run the ball?
It's a good question. I really, really hope it was because of the Tyler Biadasz sickness. Dieter, I thought, had, you know, did an admirable job stepping in the situation, finding out that morning that Biadasz was sick and he was going to have to start. But the communication between Dieter and Jaden Daniels, but honestly, more importantly, I think the communication between Dieter and Sam Cosmi seemed to be off. When the Commanders are in a loud environment, as New Orleans was, even though there was a lot of Commanders fans in the stadium, they go to that silent count, and you see, you know, Jaden, you know, kind of calls for the snap. The guard, Cosmi, looks back, sees the call, kind of points, and then the ball gets snapped. And a couple times we saw Dieter go early with the snap while Cosmi was still almost looking back at the quarterback. And all of a sudden you see Cosmi get beat, and it looks like he had a really bad game. So I'm hoping that a lot of the issues up the middle there in pass pro and then also in the run game were related to Biadasz not playing. And, you know, the Eagles have a much better defense than the Saints and can do a lot more damage, particularly up the middle there. So it's going to be a good test this week. And I think it's important for the guys to have a little success against a, you know, an actual playoff caliber football team like the Eagles, so they can, you know, as they start getting ready for, you know, what the end of this season may look like. So it's an important week, and I'm hoping that we're able to explain away a lot of the running issues based on, you know, O-line personnel.
Yeah, how much of a chance do you give them to beat the Eagles? I mean, if they could beat Philly, I mean, they're cooking with grease, and all of a sudden that Atlanta game isn't nearly as vital.
Yeah, I mean, if they beat Philly, that would be huge. Honestly, I want to see them play, you know, I want to see them play with the same intensity that they did, you know, up in Philadelphia. I want this game, I think this game will be similar in that it'll be a one-score game back and forth most of the way, and it's going to be who can finish. And I think we've seen this Commanders team not really have the killer instinct that, you know, Super Bowl contending teams have. And that's one of the big things that I want to see them, you know, start to build on, to have opportunities to put teams away or to take advantage of teams' mistakes and go down and score that extra touchdown. You know, don't settle for a field goal. Punch that ball across the goal line. Put pressure on the other team. I think this is a real kind of, you know, soul-building game for the Commanders and an opportunity to kind of, you know, exercise some of those the demons that we've seen from them as they played kind of playoff caliber football team. So I think it's going to be a really good game. I think it's going to be tight. I think the Commanders are going to come out and play well. I'm hoping that they're able to kind of put a team away for once.
Mitch, thank you, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
By the way, Mitch, best thing you ate in New Orleans?
Oh, man. The barbecue shrimp at the spot we ate was one of the best dishes that I've had. It's called Bryson's. It's in uptown New Orleans. Not just one of the best dishes in New Orleans, one of the best dishes I've ever had. It was unbelievable. I love the food down there. I can't wait for Super Bowl week, and God willing, we can all go down there and watch the local 53 play in that big game down there.
Whoa, 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 Mitch, whoa.
God willing is right.
Putting that out there.
Well, here's the question for you. Is there a more impactful player in the NFC than Jaden Daniels as we get to the playoffs? I'll hang up and listen to you guys discuss.
Ooh, I like the question.
Okay.
From Mitch Tischler. Might have to add that to the rundown as we go. I do want to talk about the secondary and how much differently it looked as well with Marshawn Lattimore added to the fold and not tested at all. Let's do that next. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Still.
Mikey Sanristil's second interception of the season. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. We had a question about how they would divvy up snaps at corner when Lattimore finally started playing, and we got our answer pretty resoundingly. Benjamin St. Just is the odd man out, and they liked enough of what they've seen from Noah Igbinoghene in the nickel that he played almost exclusively inside in the dime and in the nickel. But I will say this, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
While I totally agree with that decision based on how everyone's played this year, St. Just has played more outside than inside the last couple of years. Remember, originally he was a nickel, which didn't make a lot of sense to me because he's kind of not a twitchy guy. He's longer and more physical. It does seem to me that almost categorically, they go with their guys over anyone that was here before. That isn't to say that their guys aren't better, because I think the vast majority of the time they are. But I think on like a 98% clip, if it's guy I brought in, Igbinoghene, or guy that was here when I got here, St. Just, we're rolling with Iggy.
Yeah, unless it's a Terry McLaurin situation where a guy's so good. And no, I wasn't poking holes in. I'm saying if the point is if there's a question, they default to one thing.
Yeah, I'm not saying best player on the team who's got a huge contract. But like another example I'll give you is like they're going with Sheldon Day over Fidarian Mathis at D-tackle. Sheldon Day, who was just brought in off the street in like week whatever, versus Fidarian Mathis, who was a second-round pick in the Rivera era. Now, you could go back and tell me, here's why we like Sheldon Day more, and he's playing better, and he's been impactful. But a lot of it, to me, is they are like selling their culture, their program, and the idea of, like, we convinced Noah Igbinoghene to come in here, and if you do these things, we're going to take care of you. And then they make good on that.
Yep.
But I think it's at such a high rate that I just assume their default is, you know, the commander tag, the guys that if Peters and Quinn brought him in and wanted him, you got a head start. Having said that, it's kind of hard to argue that St. Just should be on the field when he had three snaps and one of them was another penalty for a first down. It's just been a really, really rough year for him. A guy that originally I had very high hopes for. He's had some huge moments in the regular season. You go back to that Minnesota game when they basically had him travel with Justin Jefferson. He did some really impressive things. Like, I still think he's going to have a career, but it has been ugly. And for now, he is just on the outlook.
Yeah, he's the odd man out. I mean, there's also things that are above my pay grade that I can never know. The scheme and design fits and what's asked on each individual play. You know, the scheme is bigger than any one person. Sometimes a guy is so good, you go, okay, well, let's stop. I don't care what your scheme is. Figure out how to maximize, I'm making a name, Aaron Donald or Micah Parsons or Von Miller in his prime. I don't care what scheme you have coming into the door. Somebody's so good that you adjust everything. I don't think that would be the case here with St. Jude's. I don't think they have anybody, frankly, that rises to that level. So you wonder if the schematic, you want someone that does X, Y, Z, and he does only Y and just okay. All of a sudden, he's not a fit anymore because he gets beat up a lot talking about St. Jude's. He's, you know, I think we're on an island like that at the cornerback position. Guys see receptions and yards and the penalties and things, and it's easy to pick on somebody. Harder when a D-tackle's getting knocked around for gains of 5, 6, 7 at a time. They get lost in the sauce a little bit. But fans have, you know, fairly or unfairly beaten up on St. Just, and that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. But I guess the point I'm making is he doesn't seem to be a great fit with what they do because there are deposits in the bank, to your point. This was a promising young corner who has some flaws, certainly. I wouldn't pick him to win a race against a lot of receivers. Quicker guys, I think, have given him fits over the years. They give a lot of guys fits, but especially him. But there's a place for a guy that can get up on you a little bit, maybe a bit handsy and be physical and bother you in terms of disrupting some timing. It just has not worked with him in this game, it seems. And I'm not faulting anybody. If you want to fault someone, maybe it's his. But it seems like they're not that enthusiastic about 25 on the field, and they can't wait to not do it.
But to the point, I was so sure and so convinced that he was a Quinn fit in terms of length. I think they liked the idea, too. I'm not convinced that it's not going to happen here, by the way. But he needs a reset. They got to change some things and figure some things out. I think the best case scenario is that Sanristil becomes like a tremendous nickel corner, that he is your, ideally, like an all-pro star inside. Mm-hmm. And then whether it's St. Just or you go out and you find another corner on the outside. But give Mikey Sanristil credit. We came in with the interception, which was really a bad quarterbacking play more than a great play by Sanristil. I thought that was just awful from Jake Haener to put that ball up for grabs. But Sanristil has far exceeded my expectations when you consider that he was drafted to play inside and he's become their best corner on the outside up until Lattimore made his debut and played almost every snap.
That's right.
But if you look at where he ranks among cornerbacks in the league, 59 solo tackles is fourth best in the NFL. He is a physical player. He is a willing player. Tackles at the corner position, normally not a great sign because it means you're giving up a lot of catches. But with him, like, he gets in on the action. Mm-hmm. He comes down into the box. He is tied for 18th most targeted corner. But if you look at like receptions allowed, tied for 20th, meaning, you know, it's a fewer number of catches than targets, according to, you know, the numbers based on his peers. I just think he's had a very solid rookie season. And when you consider that he's doing it in a more complicated position than what he was used to, guy who played wide receiver like 5 years ago in college, it makes it an awesome rookie season.
Oh, without a doubt.
This guy, like, put him in pen. He is legit.
So he reminds me, and this, it's funny, I was actually texting with one of my college teammates, my buddy, who was a Colts fan. Shout out to Bip. He was
Bip?
Yeah, he's Mike Roberts, but same played at the same time as real Bip Roberts.
No way.
He was Bip his whole career.
Bip Roberts?
Yeah, my guy Bip. You know, and he knows this. You wouldn't look at him and go, oh, I bet you that guy's great. Like, not, he's not on the get off the bus team, but the toughest dude I ever played with, just this little scrappy pain in the butt to deal with, and played bigger than he was, right? Hit some homers, did a little bit of everything. And that's what Sanders still is to me. He is not out of central casting for the modern-day cornerback.
No, he's listed 5'10". I would take a hair under that.
Yeah.
And he's listed at 182 pounds.
This is not one of those where you look at the length and, you know, Mel Kiper is screaming about measurables. That ain't going to be that. And this is a little bit of that cliche to it, but he's not the fastest, not the strongest, not the quickest. He's not anythingist. He's probably middle of the pack in terms of some of those things. But smart as hell, plays the grand anticipation, is not scared to throw his weight around. I mean, how many of those close to the line passes has he disrupted this year? Whether it's getting a hand on something or blowing up a blocker or knifing through to take something away.
Like, so good at that
dude sticks his nose in there. And, you know, usually if somebody's undersized and that happens, that's admirable. But they end up banged up. And, you know, to his credit, all he's done is what they've asked him to do. Usually it's a death knell for somebody, right? Where you go, he was drafted to be this one thing, and a few minutes later he's doing something else. See Davis, Jamin, right? For your example, where they thought he'll be this. Turns out he's that, but he's actually thrived. You know, like playing a challenging position when he didn't even do that at Michigan. That's pretty amazing, man.
He's the only corner on the team currently that has an interception this year, by the way. Obviously, Lattimore didn't play here very much, but didn't have one in New Orleans either. And then you've got Igbinoghene, Michael Davis, and Benjamin St. Juste, and none of those guys have picked off passes. Sanra still tied with St. Juste, team high 7 pass breakups according to the PFF numbers on the season. But the guy that I guess I'm most surprised that they're as confident in or love as much as they do is Igbinoghene. And I do think he's done some good things. I think he's been fine. But he's a little bit of a journeyman, was a first-round pick, but he comes over, a lot of familiarity mm-hmm. with Joe Witt, a lot of familiarity with Dan Quinn from Dallas, and obviously he's one of their guys.
Like, yeah, he knows what they want.
Sanra still, for good reason, one of their guys. They drafted him in the second round out of Michigan, and I guess for better or worse, and in this case worse, Michael Davis is one of their guys too,
mm-hmm.
and it has been a little bit of a struggle for him. He mostly doesn't play a whole lot. But I do think there's a good conversation to have here. We can open up the phones. First of all, what did you guys think of Lattimore? He was not tested at all. Was that a really good game by him or just a soft landing spot where the Saints couldn't actually challenge him in any way? And then how do you think moving forward they should handle the corner room, or are you pretty content with what they did? Which is St. Juste is basically on the sideline, Sanra still is the other starting corner, and you leave Igbinoghene alone in the slot. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in? We'll get to Lattimore next on Grant and Danny. Marshawn Lattimore played his first game with the Commanders, and if you didn't know it, you wouldn't have known. You never saw him. He was just kind of chilling on an island. I kept watching him, locking in pre-snap on obvious passing downs, and he would just kind of backpedal and drift into the flat, and no one would be on, like, not even a route being run anywhere over there on the vast majority of plays. But that is pretty telling that there was a respect enough from the Saints where they kind of went into the game going, all right, we'll go away from Marshawn Lattimore. So even though he did not make quote-unquote plays, he impacted the game, something we talked about yesterday, mm-hmm. and he helped a whole lot. It's got to make you feel a ton better about the secondary, not that one performance, although I'll sign up for that, but just the fact that you've got him. You know, you got this week, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. You've been a terrible matchup for those guys on paper. Now you got someone who can lock horns maybe with A.J. Brown if you want to have him travel or take away one of those guys on every single play if he just stays put on the right side of the formation, let's say. The next week, you got Drake London, Darnell Mooney, you know, decent weapons on the outside. Ray-Ray McCloud on the inside on Igbinoghene will be a tough matchup. But the Falcons have some decent weapons, even though their offense is sputtered. I can't tell you how much different things can look on paper if Lattimore can give him that kind of presence where yep. half the field is not a concern.
So you have to, you didn't have a counterpunch. You didn't have an answer for the elite wide receiver. And you look at some of the game logs that guys have had against Washington, despite the fact that they're pretty much playing coverage. They were playing soft coverage all the time to try to prevent big plays from happening, and they were still happening. I mean, to me, this was, you know, we just don't have the Joes, right? You could have the greatest scheme in the world, and at some point, even in a zone defense, someone's going to have to cover somebody. Even in a, you know, a quarter situation, or you're playing a deep shell, there's going to be a guy in your area, and you must cover him. You must have some kind of man-to-man principle in a moment. And they simply couldn't hang. Now with Lattimore, at least you got a shot, I think, with some of those elite guys. Now, one thing I did notice, to kind of your point, I want to bring that up, is he only lined up on the defense's right side, offense's left, pretty much, right, throughout the entire game. Now, to me, there's something to that, where you go, okay, that's the side of it I don't have to worry about. Everything else we can sort of cater a different way, and that's fine.
And they didn't have a receiver worth following.
Totally. But I'm wondering if that's going to be the case going forward, because if it is, then if I'm an offense, I'll go, well, I have a counter for that. It's where the guy that I want the football, the guy that I want to get the football, is never lined up on him, and I'll do something easy.
Not if you're Cliff Kingsbury.
Well, I was going to say, unless you're playing Cliff Kingsbury, and then in that case, it's perfect. 17 and 23 will shake hands and then, you know, not be part of the game from then on out. So it's interesting, just something to note going forward, if this is only a right side sort of Kingsbury thing, or if it's, no, we'll travel when it's appropriate to travel. But I'm with you. Covering Valdez-Scantling or Dante Pettis or somebody else was not travel-worthy, to borrow from the parlance of Seinfeld, and someone is sponge-worthy. But to me, the impact is clear and obvious. He's their best cornerback, duh, you know, more analysis like this to follow, and it's not even close. It's to the point that now you have an asset that allows you to do other things on defense.
He was in coverage on 39 snaps, which isn't to say he had someone to cover, but like he backpedaled into the secondary. On passing downs, 39 times, was not targeted once.
Zero.
Just a clean sheet across the entire stat and box score. Mike Sanders still was targeted 7 times, just 2 catches for 20 yards, with 7 yards yak and the interception and a pass breakup. Terrific game for him.
Good day at the office.
Noah Igbinoghene was targeted 4 times, 1 catch for 7 yards with 4 yards yak. Long of 7, obviously, with 1 PBU for him. He was really good as well. Secondary is in a pretty good place right now at the corner position. But again, I hesitate to say they got it all figured out because I think that was the easiest remaining team to play in terms of secondary. Even the Panthers, who don't have a great wide receiver room, Adam Thielen's a little bit of a third down war daddy. And like that guy is a terrific route runner.
Yep.
He's physical. I would rather deal with any of the Saints wideouts, maybe outside of MVS, although he's so inconsistent, he dropped 2 passes.
Well, like, yeah, the best strategy is to leave him open, honestly.
Right.
If you can test, he catches it.
But I would rather deal with any of those guys than Thielen, other than maybe Valdez-Scantling. But the Eagles, the Falcons coming mm-hmm. up, that's going to be a lot more telling, I think. Let's go to Phillip and Laurel on the corner room with Lattimore now entrenched. What's up, Phillip? How are you?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Talking about Lattimore, I saw his impact more in the running game outside of that last series where you saw more 3 linebacker sets. I don't know if you guys noticed that Chin was also very, very much up on the line of scrimmage. They trust their DBs more with coverage now. So I think you'll see less gashing in the run game because of Marshon Lattimore.
I think that's part of the design. I know it's one of the things we talked about, one of those second-order effects, right, of being able to cover well. Well, the product of being able to cover well also extends to more and different resources. I mean, to put it in the most basic terms, and everybody my age or around there probably played Tecmo Bowl on old school Nintendo, Tecmo Bowl and Super Tecmo Bowl. And the way it worked is the offense had 4 plays or 8 plays, depending on the year. And the defense, what your defense was, you would just try to guess the play. and you commit resources to the play. So, for example, if Grant's my opponent, I don't know what he's gonna run, but I guess Grant's doing run two. And if you did run two, I shoved it on you as a tackle for a loss. But if I'm guessing run two and you did pass one, pass two, pass three, I'm gonna get gashed. They can now bet on some runs. Whereas before, I didn't feel like they could very often because they were so terrified of getting gashed in the pass game.
I think maybe what he's referencing is they brought the safety up closer to the box, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
In Jeremy Chinn's case, I think he played the run on 11 snaps. Remember, he got hurt, obviously, which means Percy Butler finished things out. Derek Forrest played 8 snaps at strong safety, was in the box as well. But linebackers weren't really used a whole lot more like traditionally. When he's talking about the three linebackers, I'm guessing one of those safeties walking up would have been what he's talking about, because he had 15 snaps against the run for Luvu and Wagner, who don't come off the field. And then otherwise, Michael Walker, their weak side linebacker, played 3 snaps, and the rookie Jordan McGee played 1 snap.
So they held Kamara to 5 carries for 12 yards when the game was sort of in balance. Kendre Miller came in for Kamara, had better totals, but a lot of those, again, are hurry-up offense, you're in coverage,
yeah.
He gassed you for a little bit here and there, but like the regular part of the game, when the whole playbook's at your disposal, they did really well against the run.
I thought they were terrific against the run early in the game. Rodney, Upper Marlboro, you're on Grant and Danny. What's good?
Hey guys.
Hey, man.
thanks for taking my call. Listen, I think Lattimore had a soft landing, you know. I think a test will come this week when we play the Eagles. But I was saying earlier to the guy who answered the phone that, you know, and we need a pass rush so these guys are not left out there to fend for themselves. We really need to talk about the pass rush supporting your secondary, because it doesn't matter how good a cornerback they are. If they don't have a pass rush, they're gonna get burnt at some point. And that's what we're missing. We're missing a vicious pass rush that can help those cornerbacks out. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Pass rush was really good early in the game. I don't know how much of that was on Hayner. His strength, supposedly, in talking to Matt Paris, who I had a drink with in New Orleans, former Commanders beat, now with the Saints, and just reading up on Hayner last week, was he's a balls out quick guy. That was why they went to him over Rattler, because mm-hmm. Rattler holds the ball, and Rattler was going to be a guy where they were going to give up more sacks and pressures, and they didn't want to get him hit. So they said, we'll play Hayner, he's just going to get the ball out. He did not do that.
He didn't do that at all.
It was like the opposite of what he did. But maybe he just didn't see it, or they did some good things to confuse him in the secondary. I thought their pass rush, at least early in the game, was fantastic.
I thought even throughout, I know they didn't end up with as many sacks in the second half, and I think Rattler deserves some credit for that, but he had to move around. He had to make some adjustments and get away with guys. I thought a lot of times guys are one-on-one, and they were winning. I mean, we don't look at it that way as wins, but Fowler got 2 pass roughing the passer penalties that I thought were bogus, but that's from beating your guy, getting into the backfield, and harassing the quarterback. You know what I mean? Like that to me, is it's not always about sacks. We always talk about it as waves crashing on the shore.
Do you feel better or worse about the Commanders as a playoff team, as a team that can make some playoff noise, just about this season in general? Do you feel more positive or negative about the season after their 1-point win over the Saints? We'll get into that next. You can call us 800-636-1067. You want to hop in. Remember, Austin Eckler is on the show, presented by IT Cadre, today, right at 6 o'clock, a little over an hour from now, on The Fan.